Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am Josh and I am joined by Thomas.
Hello.
And we are going to do something a bit different today. As it's the day before Halloween that this comes out, we are going to talk about supposedly ghosts and precognition as kind of touching on my knowledge about parapsychology, which is kind of an obscure field which tries to apply the scientific method to claims of the paranormal. But we'll also be touching on some other things as well, like how a railway accident can change someone's entire personality, how electromagnetic signals can actually make you see God or make you believe that you're seeing God. And we're going to talk about differing ideas and concepts of the soul. So what actually is parapsychology? It is just a field which applies the scientific methods to claims of ghosts, out-of-body experiences, telekinesis, extrasensory perception, telepathy, and precognition. And obviously, I can't cover all of this today because there's quite a lot, but I picked out the two that I thought I had the most to say about, which is the ghosts and the precognition. So precognition just means being able to tell the future. And I think everyone has a colloquial understanding of what that means. But in the literature, they call it precognition. But I'm going to try and avoid that term. But anyway, I'm sure you're familiar with ghost stories. I'm pretty sure everyone is. It's something of a social fabric.
It was one of my favourite childhood pastimes, despite the fact that I couldn't sleep immediately afterwards.
Yeah, but I think there is a massive tradition, particularly from kind of the Victorian era, of ghost stories and things of that nature, kind of scary stories, which quite often have a verbal or oral tradition of being told, and that I'm sure many people can recount some. But what I've decided to do is just pick out two different sets of pictures, because of course, at least there's a bit more evidence to it with a picture than there might be just a story.
Because, yeah, or someone's testimony.
Yeah, I'm not willing to believe that people are honest most of the time, and taking people at their word generally isn't great advice.
Even if they're trying to be honest, there could be confabulations.
The entire field of psychology has told me that even if you are completely honest, your own judgments are easily misled by certain circumstantial factors, and things like your memory can be recalled incorrectly, and you can have false memories, all sorts of different things. But anyway, enough spoiling it. I'm going to get onto some of the ghost stories themselves. So this first one, as you can see on screen, is the Tulip Staircase Ghost, which was taken by Reverend Ralph W. Hardy during a visit to the National Maritime Museum, which I think is in London. I'm not too sure, in 1966. So this is obviously pre-computers, so it can't be edited. Also interesting that it's a reverend, probably with a vested interest in not lying.
You would hope.
I would hope so. I mean, it's not beyond comprehension, but it's quite a, I don't know, it's kind of a picture that I think wouldn't be amiss in like an art gallery. It's quite dramatic.
It looks like whoever's in the hood has had a hard day at work, grappling onto those railings.
Yeah, but it's also quite striking, because it's quite clear, despite the black and white picture, what you're looking at. You can see the hands, you can see it resting on the railings as well. So supposedly the story behind the picture, why this guy was taking a picture of a staircase of all things, was that he and his wife had reportedly seen a picture of the staircase, and it was kind of like it had a rope across it. So supposedly they saw a picture down from the top, which I can imagine would actually look quite nice, and they wanted to recreate it with their camera. Imagine the novelty of taking photos was still pretty strong.
In
66. So I can kind of understand the motivation for doing so, and supposedly they took a picture of the bottom of the stairs because they couldn't get to the top because it was roped off for whatever reason, and thus this picture was born. Apparently they didn't actually know there was anything in the shot until they developed the photo, and then they saw the figure on the railing, and this is one of the most famous ghost pictures that gets banded around.
Yeah. Do you know if they were both present when the photo was taken?
I think so. He was there with his wife. They went on like a day out, I assume.
That makes it even more interesting.
But I'm obviously very skeptical of these sorts of things. But even so, it's a very interesting photograph, and I enjoy the story of it. There's something about it, even though, you know, I like to be strictly rational in my thinking. There's something almost, I don't know.
I mean, what strikes me is the clarity of the ghost is almost as detailed where the light is as the stairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the lighting is almost correct, isn't it?
Yeah, it's almost as if the lighting isn't going through it as you'd expect a ghost to.
It could suggest like a double exposure sort of thing where something's been overlaid. It could be a mistake in the development process. Who knows?
Yeah.
There are many explanations, but I mean, it's a pretty striking picture nonetheless.
Oh, it is.
But one that I wanted to talk about a bit more, because there's a nice long story behind this one, is the story of the Brown Lady, which, interesting name for a ghost, but supposedly it's thought to be Lady Dorothy Walpole, who was the sister of the first Prime Minister of Britain, which is Robert Walpole. So, aristocratic lady, I suppose, must have been many years ago. So, it's rumoured that she committed adultery and was locked away in a room of the house by her husband until she died of smallpox until 1726. So I'm under the impression that this isn't just made up by people who are telling ghost stories. There is some kind of background to this.
Yeah, so that makes this, I suppose, the place where this was taken, place where a very difficult marriage existed.
Well, yeah, they've kind of set the seed for there being a reason why the ghost would stick around, because that's one thing that I find quite surprising, that if I were kind of stuck being a ghost, I'd probably be, I don't know, on some Caribbean island, just chilling out, enjoying the nice scenery. I wouldn't want to be in some dark, dingy house all the time.
But no, absolutely not.
And probably,
I take it her husband outlived her.
Yeah, I think so.
That makes sense.
But anyway, on to the actual story itself. The first sighting was all the way in 1835, when Lord Charles Townshend had invited various guests to the hall, including a colonel known as Colonel Loftus, to join in Christmas festivities. And Loftus and another guest named Hawkins said they had seen the Brown Lady one night as they approached their bedrooms, noting in particular the dated brown dress that she wore. The following evening, Loftus claimed to have seen the Brown Lady again, later reporting that on this occasion he was drawn to the spectre's empty eye sockets, dark in the glowing face, and apparently his sighting led to many of the staff that worked at the place to quit their jobs. So that's something that is documented at the very least to back up this account. However, I think it's quite interesting that the person who actually lived there only saw this ghost when they had guests around. I think at the time, 1835, it was kind of a fashionable thing to say, I've seen a ghost, I've got a haunted house. There was this kind of that, what's the word? Like, there was the culture where this was something that was capturing the public imagination.
Yeah.
And although I don't like to be too sceptical, I think there could be some potential for just telling tales.
Yeah, and that there was definitely a convention of storytelling. What was it? Telling ghost stories at dinner parties at this time as well.
Yeah, and around Christmas time, you know, people probably had a bit to drink as well. So would, even if they are being honest, how much can you trust?
Yeah, they felt compelled to be just a little bit more descriptive in their explanations.
So it's not just this sighting, there are many. So the second sighting was in 1936 by a naval captain named Frederick Marryat, who was coincidentally a friend of the novelist Charles Dickens, but he was a popular novelist in his own right. I think he wrote a few naval or like sea novels that were very popular. So he was a creative in terms of storytelling already, make of that what you will. But supposedly, after hearing about the stories previously, he asked to stay in the room where Lady Walpole had been confined to prove that there were no ghosts and they were just stories. And his theory was that they were made up by smugglers to keep people away, which is quite a rational explanation.
It's plausible, isn't it?
Yeah. So I've got an extract of what happened here, but this is also written in 1891 by his daughter. So, right, you know, there could be some poetic license here. So I'm going to read quite a long passage here. She says, "He took possession of the room in which the portrait of the apparition hung, and in which he had been often seen and slept each night with, each night with a loaded revolver under his pillow. For 2 days, however, he saw nothing, and the third was to be the limit of his stay. On the third night, however, two young men, nephews of the baronet, knocked at his door as he was undressing to go to bed, and asked him to step over to their room, which was the other end of the corridor, and give them his opinion on a new gun that just arrived from London. My father was in his shirt and trousers, but as the hour was late and everybody had retired to the rest except themselves, he prepared to accompany them as he was. As they were leaving the room, he caught up his revolver, in case you meet the brown lady," he said, laughing. When the inspection of the gun was over and the young men in the same spirit declared they would accompany my father back again, in case you met the brown lady, they repeated, laughing also. The three gentlemen therefore returned in company."
Mad lads.
Yeah. And the story goes on. "The corridor was long and dark, for the lights had been extinguished, but as they reached the middle of it, they saw a glimmer of a lamp coming towards them from the other end." And I'm reading a quote here. "One of the ladies going to the nurseries whispered the young Townsends to my father. Now the bedroom doors in that corridor faced each other, and each room had a double door with a space between, as is the case with many old-fashioned houses. My father, as I have said, was in shirt and trousers only, and his native modesty made him feel uncomfortable, so he slipped within one of the outer doors, his friends following his example in order to conceal himself until the lady should have passed by," which is quite an interesting rationale for hiding. "I've heard him describe how he watched her approaching nearer and nearer through the chink in the door until, as she was close enough for him to distinguish the colours and style of her costume, he recognised the figure as a facsimile of the portrait of the brown lady. He had his fingers on the trigger of the revolver and was about to demand it to stop and give the reason for its presence there when the figure halted of its own accord before the door before which he stood, and holding the light of the lamp she carried to her features, grinning in a malicious and diabolical manner at him. The act so infuriated my father, who was anything but lamb-like in disposition, that he sprang into the corridor with a bound and discharged the revolver right in her face. The figure instantly disappeared, the figure at which for several minutes three men had been looking together, and the bullet passed through the outer door of the room on the opposite side of the corridor and lodged in the panel on the inner one. My father never attempted again to interfere with the brown lady of Rainham." So that is the story of an encounter with, I suppose, a Victorian skeptic, which is quite interesting. I find it interesting as well that he claims to have pulled a revolver on the ghost.
Yeah.
You'd think that even then you'd kind of have an understanding that it probably wouldn't work, but I suppose
it definitely wouldn't hurt to try. But I suppose as a skeptic, you wouldn't think it's a ghost, would you? You'd think this is a person.
Well, it'd be a bit worrying if he shot them straight through the head. But
yes, it would.
But I think there's a certain element of bravado and dramatism here, like jumping out at this ghost, demanding, "Why are you here?" This sort of thing.
It's a bit of an overreaction, you would think.
Yeah, and also the staring at him with a diabolical manner. Can you really rationalise why that would be? Like, he's done nothing.
What would your reaction be if you were in the approaching the corridor and you saw that someone staring at you in that diabolical manner?
I certainly wouldn't burst out of the door. I would be running away as fast as I can.
Yeah, my response would not be, "How dare you?" And then to put a gun on them, it would be more to think, "Are you lost?"
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.